Stay connected this winter with this unbeatable deal from Breezeline. Get reliable, fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month with all-in pricing for 2 years. But that's not all. Your first month is on us. This deal gets better with a free modem and installation, along with free Wi-Fi your way whole home coverage. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and keep all your devices connected and secured with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires March 3rd, 2024. Learn more at breezeline.com.
For years, I just dreaded going to the dentist. But at Advanced Dentistry, I don't have to.
First and foremost, they want you to feel comfortable when you walk in. Like, you'll feel it. Whereas in the past, I might have gone into the dentist and thinking, I might feel some pain at some point. But with IV sedation, it can be something that you don't dread.
If you've been avoiding the dentist because of fear, worry, or just not wanting to be judged, you're not alone. Visit nofeardentist.com to learn how IV sedation can change your life.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast on the left.
Right from your glaze.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
You know what's really, like, probably the saddest thing of all about Rogaine?
What?
Is that when you read about it, like, I went to go, like, do some research about side effects of Rogaine, what can do to you and stuff, and the saddest thing is someone saying, like, yeah, I gotta use Rogaine every day, but it kind of also sort of doubles as, like, a hairstyling product. And it's very brutally sad.
Yes, all right. Welcome to the last podcast of the left, everyone. I'm Ben Kissel. That's Marcus Parks. He's in a closet in Los Angeles.
I'm not. Henry Zabrowski is.
I am, absolutely. I got my dog bed. It's actually very cold where I am right now, because I'm on the side of a mountain, surrounded by roosters and thousands of barking dogs. It feels like I'm in a weird tenement camp at the end of the world.
Right? Well, a weird tenement camp is sort of what we'll be talking about today.
Oh, definitely what we're going to be talking about.
Good Lord.
Today.
All right. So this is The Children of God Part 2, and I can only describe this episode as spunky and disgusting because I am not
very
looking forward.
Spunky.
It's very spunky, and I'm not going to lie. I'm not looking forward to the content.
We are three people. I would describe us at a base level as pretty horny.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the three of us are, like, all got pretty healthy sex drives. I'm like a little chihuahua. I've described this last episode. David Berg, though, is by far the horniest man. Did I say that he's hornier than Albert Fish?
I don't think you said it until you just said it.
He is hornier than Albert Fish, and I think he should have gotten a trophy.
I don't know if that's true. I think he should have gotten a prison sentence.
So when we last left David Berg and the Children of God in 1970, he and almost 200 of his disciples had settled at the Texas Soul Clinic on a plot of land outside of Thurber in Texas, a ghost town off of I-20 close to Cadu and Palo Pinto.
I say blow it up.
Yes.
All of Texas needs to be redone. Half the middle of Texas needs to kind of just be like, let's give it a mulligan.
It doesn't have to be blown up. It's already in shambles. Yo. Just build it up.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All of these towns are dead. So here at the Texas Soul Clinic, new members that they called babes were given new names, which is another classic cult tactic. These names were always from the Old Testament, names like Caleb, Deborah, and Shadrach.
I love Shadrach from the Bible because he was the Klingon weapon specialist.
I remember that. Wasn't his friend Abednego? You know, it's interesting. My brother had the reverse of this. He had a biblical name to start with, Bartholomew, and then all the kids called him Bart the Fart. So from then on, he went with Eric. You can't rhyme anything with Eric.
Derek?
You could just call him Big Gay Eric.
Well, but that's not a rhyme.
So the people, after they were given their names, were also given tribal identities and split into 12 groups to mimic... The people were also given tribal identities and were split into 12 groups to mimic the 12 tribes of Israel, also from the Old Testament. But in this case, the tribes were little more than work assignments.
Hmm. Now, again, you divide people. You separate them from their actual personalities. You call them a different name. You break them up into even tinier mini groups. The idea is to keep people as isolated as humanly possible and forgetting all sort of connections to the real world. And that's how you can really control them and really eat that pussy.
Well, I do remember when the tribe of, what was it? The tribe of Benjamin in the Bible, there was a whole chapter where they were on clean the shitter duty. And that was of course, in Deuteronomy. And that was sad.
Yeah, it's exactly how it was. One tribe would be maintenance. Another would be made up of cooks. Another was in charge of livestock. And still others would, quote unquote, procure food from neighboring towns like Strawn and Mingus.
That was the raccoon group. That's what they called themselves.
Is the mayor of a town like Mingus, is it just a giant, just man baby with a watermelon hat on? Like literally like a carved out old watermelon and be like, today we're making lollipops money. And everyone's just like, yay, yay, yay. Finally a mayor who speaks for the people.
If lollipops became money, I would move to Mingus in a heartbeat.
However, none of these tribes were actually allowed to partake in anything that was procured either legally or illegally. All of the good stuff went to the people at the top, while the rank and file were left with either rotten food or animal feed thrown out by neighboring ranches. Let me tell you, that animal feed shit is gross.
I know. You made a point to allude to the fact that you've eaten it before, so now I must request, have you eaten animal feed?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm happy you got
it. He doesn't come. He literally lives in a world of brine. All he does is he'll eat whatever scraps are around.
It's curiosity.
It is. It's animal feed.
And plus, it just sometimes when you're, you know, throwing it out for the cattle, sometimes the dust will get in your mouth and you get a pretty good idea for what it tastes like.
Mm. Why are you cackling the entire time? Are you screaming like, "Gah! Eat up! Everybody eat up! It's dinner time!" Like a fucking psychopath?
Yeah, and like, no! And like I said, like when you're a kid, you know, the slang term for some of the cattle pellets that you give them, it's cake is the slang term.
Yeah.
So when you're a kid, it's like, oh, it's called cake. Let's see if it tastes like cake. It don't taste like cake.
Yeah, because why would they give cows food that tastes like cake? It doesn't make any sense. It's not their birthday.
If I was a farmer, all my cows would be eating cupcakes by Melissa all day long.
Ooh, what kind of beef would that make? Ooh, that would be good. Anyway, we got to get back to the children of God here. I can't think about cake beef. Ooh, God, that's good.
Now, at the Texas Soul Clinic, as it would be for much of his rule, David Berg held an authoritarian rule over his disciples, with all decisions happening from the top down, which was a privilege of being the end times prophet. He was the guy at the top. He was the guy at the end of the world, you know, like this guy knew what he was talking about. And since God had told Moses, David, about the end of the world and all manner of other things, it wasn't so much of a stretch to think that God would also give David Berg instructions on the cult members' day-to-day lives.
Now, think about this. This Texas Soul Clinic was a guy, I believe it was Fred Jordan, who was like an old sort of like teacher of David Berg. They were back in the day when he was more evangelical and like wearing suits and shit. They knew each other and they got into a disagreement where Fred Jordan was like, I don't want to work with you anymore. You're obviously a pervert. And he was like, no. And they left. When he shows back up, he shows up with this fucking busload of hippies that are all like, the way they said that their smiles were like both either like empty but also ironic, like they were like ha 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 ha, like acting like it was all normal. Obviously it was not. They're living in a world of shit. The way they described it was that their campouts were just covered in trash, where they would just pile all of the food and stuff that they stole from other neighborhoods into a big pyramid in the center, and then they would go and pick shit out of it. There's only so long you can handle that without not believing the guy that is telling you to do that is Jesus Christ.
Yeah, there's no way that bizarre trash heap Christmas tree that you made out of food is an indication that person you're following is the second coming of Jesus himself.
It's like Fraggle Rock.
Yes. It does sound kind of fun, I have to admit, like going to a huge Christmas tree of rotten food. Yes. And just grabbing whatever like you want.
It sounds like Neverland Ranch, or like Neverland, the real Neverland, but it's actually more like Neverland Ranch.
Yes,
because
that's
of
true.
All the kid fucking.
Right, right, right.
So here's how a day in the average member of the Children of God would go. Mornings were Bible study, after which each member was given God's orders for the day, as was befit their tribe. Every member was also assigned a buddy who stood at their side at all times, including on trips to the bathroom. And speaking of the bathroom, the Children of God had a strict two sheets rule, meaning nobody could use more than two sheets of toilet paper on each trip.
I wouldn't last a second.
Yeah, I use two hearty handfuls.
Yes, I just like to. I mean, I'll just take two rolls and go into the bathroom with that and come out with two empty rolls.
But do you know that if you actually read, if you've ever spent time, like if you ever forgot your phone for some reason and you're in a bathroom and you've just read the label of the toilet paper roll, right? It says that two sheets is supposed to be the normal quote unquote serving of toilet paper.
Well, I don't know.
For who?
I don't know. I need as much flax as I could jam into my system. Like, sometimes I'll poop a bunch of rocks. Like, I poop a bunch of just, like, little, like, diamonds. Like, I'm a little fucking, like, I'm run by the Rothschilds. Like, my guts are. But I still need more than two sheets.
Most people do. Yeah. So it's a survivor-type setting. Jeff Probst should be there breaking up the camps. So that's what's going on. Divide and conquer.
Yeah, divide and conquer. And while those people were in the bathroom, they more often than not used the time for Bible studies. Each member had to memorize what the cult called the set card, which was a list of 300 Bible verses, in addition to memorizing 10 chapters of the Bible. And loudspeakers, ever a favorite of cult leaders, would constantly blare someone reading passages from the Bible. Jim Jones used this exact same tactic where you just had, and Om Shinrikyo used the exact tactic too. If you have a compound in which a cult is hanging out day to day, there's gonna be loudspeakers, without a doubt. And when people were reading their passages aloud during Bible study, they would also usually listen to a tape saying the exact same words. What that meant, pretty much nobody had any time to think, nobody had any downtime, which is another time-honored tactic of cult compounds.
Mm-hmm. That's how you keep everybody on the same track. You know what I mean? So you keep everybody in the vibe, because the part about it's keeping a vibe going. It's keeping, because the idea is also you're trying to build up the tempo. We're headed towards the end of the world. All of this is like, it's present. It's happening right now. And also, what we're going to talk about too is that this was a very puritanical society at this time. There was no sex yet. It was just work and Bible passages.
So is it possible that, when one of the members of the cult Children of God were going and speaking into the loudspeaker, they just started to sing, and then that person became Katy Perry? Is that possible?
There were actually a couple of people celebrities that grew up in the Children of God. River Phoenix and Joaquin Phoenix grew up in the Children of God. Wow. Rose McGowan grew up in the Children of God. That's pretty much it, but that's some heavy hitters right there.
Some of my favorite actors.
Yeah. Yeah, wonderful people.
God, Rose McGowan. She made my pubic hair grow.
Scream.
I can't even get into it.
So everything at the Children of God compounds were communal down to the shoes, with nobody having any possessions save one, a Bible. Each person was allowed to have their own Bible, and that was it, which is an isolation technique in and of itself. Possessions.
Think of this. David Berg would straight up say, look, you could use a Bible is perfect for anything. You could scare a fox away with it. You could rip out the papers and eat it, and that's fiber. Help you towards your two-sheet rule. Am I right, young Marjorie, with your puddles of pudding you make every morning? I've seen it.
Cleanest button down, but not a page left in the Bible, huh?
See, really, no matter what people say, possessions are important to humans. It's just the way that we're built.
Yeah.
And stripping possessions down to just one thing makes that possession the de facto most important object in that person's life.
If you ever watch Lock Up Raw on MSNBC, you'll notice prisoners, they have a finite amount of objects, usually like 20, and those are life. So you're like, how did someone get stabbed for stealing somebody's, rosary or whatever it might be? And it's because that thing is the most important thing ever.
Exactly. So when the children appeared in public, they would often be seen wearing red sackcloth. Sackcloth is a material that's usually made from black goat hair and is extremely uncomfortable. They'd also smear ash on their face, completing the ash and sackcloth Old Testament double whammy, which signaled mourning and or repentance. And it just made them look creepy as fuck. It just made them look
weird. Yeah, they
looked
super metal.
Yeah.
Like, they showed up, like, wailing, covered in sackcloth and ash, and they were all just... That must have been awesome. I would have showed up. If I saw that, I would have been like, they're like, no, sir, this is supposed to be bad. I'd be like, metal.
I don't think you would fit in very well. You might be more of a Hare Krishna type.
So members justified all of these practices and behaviors by saying that all of it put together was their preparation for Armageddon, which is, of course, exactly what David Berg told them they needed to believe in to be a part of the children of God. Like a lot of cults, the whole thing centers around Armageddon, and David Berg's control centers around Armageddon, because Armageddon right. is fear, and fear equals control.
So somehow we convinced them that God was only picking up people who looked like extras from Lord of the Rings on Armageddon on the Day of Judgment, and they dressed like a bunch of idiots.
What I found really interesting when we were reading this, the book that we've been reading right now, which is called
Jesus Freaks.
And part of it equates the idea of the original apocalypse fantasy that was written into the first like Old Testament version of the Bible. And the whole point was to make the Jewish slaves feel better about the fact that the world was going to end soon. Don't worry. Mm-hmm. You don't need to fight the powers that be, because you'll be out of here soon.
Mm-hmm. And really, for a lot of people, the whole Revelation thing, the whole end of the world thing, the 144,000, a lot of that stuff is a 20th century invention. Most of that stuff didn't, like, people didn't take that shit seriously for a very long time until there was a book, I think, I can't remember what it's called. It's called, like, The End of All Things or something like that. It was written by one of those evangelical assholes.
Right.
It became extremely popular. It was one of the best-selling books of the decade. And that's really when that stuff, when that really, like, apocalyptic beliefs and when people realized that those apocalyptic beliefs could be used to their advantage, that's when that really started. It was in the middle part of the 20th century.
Yeah, the Dr. James Dobson crowd. And my mother was a huge believer in Armageddon, which was a wonderful relief for me, because I didn't have to go to school often, because I would be like, I'm tired. She'd be like, the world could end on Tuesday. Yeah. Why go to school on Monday?
Yeah. And
was your mom's favorite song that Armageddon song by Aerosmith?
We had an entire sermon on Aerosmith, because there's that lyric Steven Tyler talks about not seeing God's way. What's the name of that one song that he did?
I can't. Ragdoll?
Not Ragdoll.
Back in the Saddle.
Yeah, somewhat. No, it's not that. No, Aerosmith was on the Jesus hit list. They did not like him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, well, that's the thing. I mean, speaking of what Henry said about all that stuff being put in there to make the Jews feel better about their lot in life, nobody whose life is going great believes in Armageddon.
Right.
But, I mean, that is just an absolute fact. There is nobody, there is no millionaire that believes in Armageddon. There is nobody in a happy marriage that believes in Armageddon. I mean, these are people that want the world to end, but they don't want to end it by themselves. They want God to do it for them.
Right.
Because then it takes it out of their hands.
Yeah.
It takes it out of the responsibility of having to deal with your life. It takes it out of your hands. Now it's like, oh, I have this bigger thing I have to worry about. I don't have to worry about getting my shit together. I don't have to worry about, like, reconnecting with my family or having friends or having a career, because the world's gonna be over soon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is why you didn't ever have to go to school, Ben.
I loved that. if I had one really, really strong arm and one really weak arm, I'd cover my strong arm and then I'd release the cover and I'd say, it's Armageddon.
What?
I don't know, but if I was an arm wrestler, that's what my nickname would be.
Oh,
Armageddon.
I thought you were talking about just masturbation or something.
No, yes. Not masturbation. What is wrong with you? You always go the blue route. I'm talking about a physical sport here.
I am sorry, but I imagine the copyright on Armageddon in the arm wrestling world has to have been taken already.
if it hasn't, I'm taking it.
Well, about these cult members, about their general attitude, one father who lost a child to the cult, he described the members as having a, quote, depressing sameness. Mm. And that was by design by David Berg. But, you know, despite all of this strict behavior, or possibly because of it, the Children of God actually managed to snag a semi-famous rock musician, Jeremy Spencer, one of the original guitarists for Fleetwood Mac, who played on their first four albums, left the band in 1971 for the Children of God and remains a member in good standing to this day.
And he was the only member of Fleetwood Mac to not have sex with Stevie Nicks.
True!
And that's amazing.
That is amazing. But he is the first one to try cocaine up his asshole, which he taught to Stevie.
You need more than two sheets if you do that.
But this is what's interesting here, is that the music was a lot of how they got people involved in the cult. Because Aaron Berg, David Berg's son, also did the same shit, where he would play. They would go and meet hippies by him playing guitar and being like, so you want to learn to rock like Jesus Christ? And but he had this big, poofy hair that they called like a halo, but it sounds like a Jufro.
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of a halo in a way.
He kind of looked like a skinny version of the lead singer MC5.
Okay.
Yes.
Not bad. Yeah, music is huge in these situations.
Oh, yeah, it's gigantic. You know, I mean, and it's kind of the same thing again, like Om Shinrikyo. They used anime, they used the types of things. They always use the types of media that attracts the types of people that they want.
Right.
Om Shinrikyo, they used anime and manga to attract pretty much nerds, you know, people that were kind of social outcasts. And the Children of God, they used music. They used like popular types of music to bring in.
They were trying
the
to get hippies. That's hippie bait.
Right.
Yeah, that's total hippie bait.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I said before, every bit of this came from David Berg himself, who ruled the Children of God with a terrible temper, usually blasted out of his mind on wine. He was a mean, mean drunk. And he was always drunk. In fact, most of the sermons he gave at the Texas Soul Clinic were just drunk ramblings. You just get wasted, sit down in front of a bunch of people, and just ramble for a couple hours.
Yeah, because it's true, because we say right here there's two different kinds of sermons at the TSC, one for the rank and file, for all the plebes, and then one for the central members, like his core group that were around David Berg, the only people that would hang out with him on a day-to-day basis. And basically they would say his weird sermons, whereas that you'd go have dinner with him and he'd have already had like three or four bottles of wine, and he would just do these weird like kind of top just, of his head
yeah stream of consciousness shit up. Yeah, yeah, just making shit up. Yeah,
basically he just did what James Gandolfini did on his final night. Just got trashed off of wine. I love James Gandolfini, great actor.
Oh.
But now that you mentioned Christian music, I can't stop thinking of DC Talk and Carmen.
And actually, I do want to say, you know, we mentioned the book Jesus Freak earlier.
Yeah.
There are two books named Jesus Freak. One, the awesome one about the Children of God, and one super lame one that's written by DC Talk.
I'm sure it is. I had to listen to DC Talk on a regular basis.
Ugh.
That's why I don't like music today.
Yeah, and those sermons that David Berg would give, the rank and file ones, those would be really not necessarily anti-sex, but very restrictive of sex. He would tell them that sex was something to be saved for marriage. Lower members, they weren't even allowed to hold each other's hands. They couldn't even kiss before marriage. But if you were in the inner circle, especially if you were David Berg's children, sex was what the Children of God was all about.
Why did he say it was going to be spunky and disgusting at the start of the show? Oh, here's why.
Can you imagine if Santa was horny all the time? And part of the thing is that when Santa came down to give you presents, is that his penis was all hard, and that he just was like, you would have to come down and be like, Santa, I'm sorry. Like, if kids that were awake, they said that's why you had to be asleep on Christmas Eve, because if not, Santa would go down on you.
Kind of a horny Krampus story, huh?
That's David Berg.
Wow.
See, the Berg family, they had always been extremely fucked up. But now that David had reached the status of end-time prophet, he could get away with pretty much whatever he wanted.
Because think about this, is that when he was just wearing a suit, just doing regular preacher bits, he was doing the rub downs on his daughter to get her go to sleep at night.
Yeah, he was masturbating his daughter from the age of like 9.
Yeah, this is the man who had sexual fantasies about his mother on a regular basis and all that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, and he'd also been having, you know, incestuous relationships with one of his kids by this point. But when Children of God came around and when he became the end times prophet, this is pretty much when you see, when a person does something like that, when you have such a disgusting, incestuous pedophile, this is what happens when that person gets to do whatever they want, when they get the license to take all of their fantasies and actually realize them.
Yeah, but that's when Michael Jackson made Thriller. You know,
know,
like he just created a cult that went nowhere.
It's two sides of the same coin. It's
right.
Like, what do you do? It's like, yes, fantastic, fantastic dance album.
Mm-hmm.
And you're probably the best it's ever been. King of Pop. Just leave Macaulay Culkin alone. Now he's made a pizza band. He made a band about pizza.
The Pizza Underground. It was all Velvet Underground songs, but he replaced a lot of the words with pizza.
Macaulay Culkin did that?
Yeah, it was great.
He's still my favorite. God, I love him. Everything he's ever done.
He was molested into that band.
He was not.
Was.
Pizza. No, there's nothing wrong with pizza.
Pizza's all dirty now, thanks to hashtag Pizzagate.
Yeah. Well, we might tie it. Whatever. So, here here is an example of some of the fucked up things that happened between David Berg and his family. One night, Berg was holing up in a hotel in Dallas where he was hiding from embarrassment after getting deported from Israel, which is a part of what sparked the extreme anti-Semitism that he would display later on in life.
And real quick, we were going to find out a lot is that they bounced around internationally all over the place trying to find a place. Trying to find a new home for children of God. Also, they were being persecuted everywhere. So they went to Israel thinking, oh, we're going to show up and they're going to love us. And literally Israel was like, no, get the fuck out of here. And they were like, you fuck here. Like, stop rubbing your daughter for a second. I need you to fill out this paperwork.
Yeah.
My sister is the best gift giver I've ever met of any person. It's Jackie Zabrowski. She shops all year thinking about her family and friends and puts little things aside for their birthdays and Christmases. I have no idea how she does it. I don't know how she do it. But guess what? She always wins Mother's Day, but not this year. I'm coming back. Ready to win Mother's Day and cement your reputation as the best gift giver in the family? I'm taking the crown. All right. Give the moms in your life an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos. I mean this. We have the Aura frame up in my home. We absolutely love it. I can put photos on it very, very easily through the app. It's fun to do. And the memories keep cycling and I get emotional. And we filled it with pictures of Carmi and Wendy. And that is not sad. That is celebratory. So you should try it. It's honestly a really good product. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code LEFT at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Finding work-life balance can be tough, but Squarespace gives you the tools to reach your goals and have time to celebrate. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. With the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint, you can select from curated layout and styling options to create a personalized website optimized for every device. Get your website discovered fast with integrated, optimized SEO tools. Plus, make checkout easy for customers with easy-to-use payment tools. And with Squarespace AI, you can explain what your site is about, choose your tone, enter what you need, and get auto-generated text. And that helps you save time. I know I'm sitting on about two literal wheelbarrows filled with horse pics. Now, part of the issue has been is a lot of these pictures are getting stopped at customs because some of them do depict various world leaders in horse-like circumstances that seems to be pinging a lot of these custom agents' accounts. Now, so what I've done to do is like, so while I'm trying to work on hand smuggling these horse pics over various country borders, I then also have time, because Squarespace is doing all the other ad work for me, to go and work on my killdozer at home. So thank you, Squarespace, for allowing me to diversify in the best way possible for this country. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial when you're ready to launch. Go to squarespace.com/left to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Ready for an amazing deal? Breezeline's fiber-powered internet starting at $19.99 per month offers the reliability you deserve and security you can trust. Whether you're streaming, gaming, or working from home, we've got all your needs covered with speeds up to 1 gig and our 2-year price lock guarantee. This deal gets even better with 2 free months of internet, free equipment, and free Wi-Fi your way to protect against cyber threats. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires July 8th, 2024. Learn more at breezeline.com.
I do have a question about money. How do they finance these trips?
Every person who joined the Children of God signed over everything they owned.
Okay, so they just pulled it all together? Because it's an expensive trip.
Yeah, they pulled it all together. Okay. And there were also business people around, you know, anytime they set up a new colony, there were people with money that were sympathetic to their cause and would donate to that.
Oh, I see.
But the majority of their money, we'll talk about how they came upon that on the next episode with a little technique called flirty fishing.
Oh, right.
But we'll get into that later. So, while they were in this hotel room, Berg held a meeting with his daughter Deborah and her husband, his son Hosea and his wife, and Berg's son Aaron and his wife Shula, who had just recently married into the family. She was brand new with all this.
So these are three children of his and their spouses.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And after the meeting was adjourned, Berg stripped naked, took out a bottle of wine and said that it was time for a, quote, sharing party.
I hope everybody enjoyed the meeting. I hope we wrote all the notes down as we got the composition books out. Did I see everyone close them? That's wonderful to see. I love you. I still want to remember how good you kids did in school. I'm so happy with how classes went today. Now, everybody, it's time to see Daddy's penis.
It's absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, sharing parties, they were family orgies. Although in the beginning there was no swapping involved, it was pretty much just a naked father who looked like Santa Claus walking around a hotel room watching his grown children fuck their spouses on mattresses on the floor.
Look what I'm doing, Aaron. I'm jumping in between your legs. It's like a military exercise. I'm using it to challenge my dexterity.
Oh,
I like how you're fucking your wife. It's how I would fuck her if my penis worked.
Which is also very interesting. We're going to find out he's also completely impotent. He can't get an erection but in his second half of, like, during this whole time period. So he's just watching his kids fuck each other.
Marcus is skeptical about lack of vulnerability.
Yeah. No, he could get hard.
Well, he talked about, when we talk about when he starts really getting into it with his granddaughter, he couldn't get it up.
Yeah, that's the... Yeah, he couldn't get it up with his granddaughter, but everybody else, he was fucking all the time.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, as we'll find out in the next episode, his son was quoted as saying, Dad was a really sexy guy.
That's a good thing that he couldn't. God. I really do envision, like, after the Supreme Court makes a really big ruling, they do the exact same thing.
Just time, like, for sharing party.
Time for sharing.
And, you know, all this family orgy shit, the bizarre views of family didn't stop there. See, Shula, she had been pregnant with another man's child when she met and married Berg's son, Aaron, and after she became pregnant again, Berg sent Shula and Aaron to Canada and gave her illegitimate son away to another member named Susan. And the practices of splitting up families and familial orgies will become common practice for the children of God. And this here is where a lot of Berg's insanity and evil nature lies. See, every despicable practice that the family ended up spreading wide, Berg tested it on his own immediate family first with
it was very similar
results.
To L. Ron Hubbard did the same thing. L. Ron Hubbard had an inner circle where he would test out all of his ideas on the inner circle first before it goes to the rest of the Scientologists.
So yeah. This would be a good time to be on the outer circle.
Yeah, I mean,
so this is not the best time to be close to the leader.
Oh, no, this is a terrible time to be close to the leader.
It's never good to be close to the leader. Never be close to the leader because you're being used as a pawn. The whole point is to see how far he can go with you. And then see, you're just testing ground. So it's like his failures are even worse than his successes.
No, you want to be close to the leader. You get the good food. You get the good drink. I mean, other than these orgies, apparently.
I mean, there were some people in the Children of God cult that had been a part of it for decades that never had any real idea that any of this shit was going on. I mean, there were some news stories that were coming out here and there, but they weren't really affected by it. They had heard about it, but they were also being told the whole time that it was just lies. So not everybody that was a part of the Children of God cult was involved in the gigantic pileup fuck orgy. Berg, as far as the fuck orgy went, he would even have sex with his son's wives, using it as a game to play him against each other, promoting one son for letting Berg have sex with his wife, then demoting another until Berg wanted to fuck that son's wife again later on, which, not surprisingly, ended very badly.
Yeah, I want to vomit. That's the whole thing.
I mean,
makes me want to vomit.
Sexy. If you are hard, I guess you're allowed to be because this is America, and I can't tell you to not be hard. But don't be hard.
I mean, it's just the idea of your dad with your wife.
Yeah.
I mean, that is,
and not only your dad with your wife, but your dad with your, like, brother's wife, and like your brother feeling good that he's getting promoted because your dad fucked your brother's wife and you feeling bad because of that.
Well, my older brothers are gay, so my dad would have to go deep sea diving in whatever they were getting into.
Can you imagine your father having sex with your brother's husband? Ugh. Just like really going away at him and looking out over at you, the smile on his face, the thumbs up. You can't replicate that with anything else.
Oh, what's that in the corner of the studio? It's a loaded gun. I think I'm going to go grab it and shoot my brains out. Henry, what is wrong with you? Good God.
See, all this sexual promiscuity, it wouldn't really be a part of the official church doctrine for a while to come. At this point, publicly, Berg was just dipping his toe into polygamy.
And by think about how long the nail was on that toe.
And I don't the analogy. Dipping into, yeah, the dipping the toe in analogy is extra disgusting given the context.
May I put my toe in you?
You do it.
It's for God. Come on, let me try it. It's kind of like, it's kind of fun. It's like your penis, it's like my toe is a little pencil and your butthole is a little pencil holder.
So you just want to put the toe in?
Yeah.
All right.
This is a catamaran.
So by 1970, Berg had shipped off his first wife, whom he referred to as the old wine.
Very classy.
Which is actually, that's the better wine. You want an old wine.
Yeah, you do want an old wine. And he kept Karen Zerbe by his side. Karen Zerbe, if you remember from the first episode, was his new wife. He referred to her as the new wine.
Ugh.
And he also referred to them as Old Church and New Church.
I would have called her Mad Dog 2020.
It's really like, David Berg sort of reminds me of a manager I had at Borders in Tallahassee, yeah, who was this big fat guy that was like rumored to be a swinger. He wore nothing but pewter rings, and he thought he was like the bomb. He just thought he was like the most romantic, slick dude with women. And the way he talked about it, because also the way he talked about Shula, the way he wrote in his journal about Shula was like, I went and I kissed Shula behind the barn. I think she's into me. And then, like, calling your ex-girl, your older wife, the old wine. You need the old wine in order to make the new wine. And also you need new wine to get some life into the old wine, because sometimes that old wine acts like a real bitch.
Oh, my God. Well, I wish they would have stomped his balls like they were grapes and he would have peed a little wine himself. This guy's a pervert.
Oh, he's the worst. See, all this old wine, new wine shit, it was announced to the entire congregation in the first of the infamous Mo letters. Mm. And the Mo letters were a series of rambling newsletters that Berg wrote himself, written with paragraphs numbered like passages from the Bible, to give people that little bit of subtle familiarity.
And definitely, when you have Mo letters, you certainly have Mo problems.
You did that joke?
Thank you.
You felt comfortable doing that?
I'm sitting on a dog bed.
I was about to say, it seemed like you were sitting on that Mo letters joke for like a couple weeks now.
Couple weeks.
Wow. Pulled it out of his pocket. Look at that.
Sitting on this dog bed, having a good time. Got a couple of blankets to prop me up.
That's good.
Yeah.
Mo problems indeed.
Now, the style of writing in these Mo letters, it was that goofy, quote, you know, that far out hippie style that uses dumb words like heavy all the time and just had a shitload of exclamation points everywhere. Hmm. For example, this is Berg's first Mo letter. This is a little excerpt from Berg's first Mo letter.
If you'll even take a look at Bible history, you will make the shocking discovery that most of God's greats had oodles of wives, women, mistresses, harlots, and what have you!
Yeah, there's a big exclamation point on the end of that. It's just, and what have you?
Oodles of wives, you say?
And what have
oodles
you?
Oodles of wives.
Wow. Oodles.
I don't like to say the word oodles because it sounds like ooh, like gross. And there's nothing gross about a wife. I would call them more like poodles, because I think poodles are adorable, and I wish I could stick my toe in one.
Poodles of wives.
Now, like all good cult leaders who are masters of nudging people along, polygamy was just the first step on the road to the children of God becoming a full-blown fuck cult. And naturally, parents who lost their kids to this lifestyle didn't take kindly to it.
They no way!
Shocking.
They formed a group called FreeCog, or Free Our Children from the Children of God.
Hmm.
And Thanks,
Nancy. Great, great name, Nancy. Thank
Free
you.
God.
Like, I feel very strong about the name. It needs to sound like a thing that people could just kind of say. And FreeCog is a word that people can say.
That is a word people can say.
So this is when Ted Patrick, a.k.a. Yeah. Black Lightning, comes into the picture. Ted was, at the time, making a name for himself deprogramming cult members on behalf of their parents. And Ted got the name Black Lightning, one, because he was black,
Yeah.
And very appropriate.
And two, because the first step of his deprogramming program was to kidnap members off the street by bundling them into a car and whisking them away to an undisclosed location.
And this sounds vaguely illegal.
It was extremely illegal. It was a textbook unlawful kidnapping because these were adults.
Right. Like, and this was the Netflix documentary I referenced on the last show.
Yeah, deprogrammed. It's pretty solid. Now, Ted Patrick's theory was that you had to start the whole thing, the whole deprogramming process, with a shock to throw the members off balance. A physical shock, saying that the kidnapping part of it was essential to the whole process because the whole thing has to be extremely traumatic.
The first thing I do is I show up as Tony the Tiger, right? I'm dressed up in the Tony the Tiger. They see me and they're laughing and stuff because I'm going, they're great. And I take a bag, right? And I put a bag over their head, right? And then the first thing I do is I bonk them back and forth with a couple of paddles so they get really confused. Then I spin them around three or four times. Then I dump in a bunch of cream corn using a gigantic crane I got. Really got to shock them out of it. Also, I got barrels of this cream corn that I gotta let go of.
So you say you witnessed the kidnapping? Yeah, it looked like a Furby did it, or like a what do they call furries? A furry did it, I think. And then he made him into human cereal.
Well, of course, I mean, Ted Patrick ended up going to jail for kidnapping, eventually.
Saving lives.
And, you know, sometimes he fucked up the kids way worse than if the parents would have just left him alone. But you know what? His heart was in the right place.
Total character.
Yeah.
It does kind of feel like what's going on right now, too, in just in the world in general, where it's like our heroes are almost worse than the villains, where they're almost just as bad. They're being bad at your job of being a hero is just worse than being a shithead.
It ain't right.
No, it ain't. Parents who wanted to get their children away from the children of God were referred to in the cult as 1036ers, after the Bible verse Matthew 10:36, which reads, "And a man's foes shall be they of his own household." Now, this verse is tailor-made for a cult that wants to isolate its members from their friends and family. And it was a favorite of Children of God members to quote to Ted Patrick while he was trying to deprogram them.
The Bible sounds like it was written by people wearing no pants, but they were wearing shoes and occasionally a shirt.
They were a bunch of homeless men that were sexually obsessed with the coolest guy in a group, the coolest homeless man in the world. They got obsessed with him. I'm going to say sexually.
Yeah.
Because they were always washing and sucking his feet and getting him food. That's who wrote the Bible.
But that is one of the myths about Jesus. He was actually fairly wealthy for the time.
Really?
Yes. Like people are like, oh, he wore sandals. No one else was wearing sandals.
Yeah, I guess everyone else was barefoot.
And he didn't exist. Yes, he didn't exist.
That's another very possible truth there.
Yeah.
But what David Berg also used was the idea of, we always talk about this with cults, is that you use the idea of we're being persecuted to show, look, we're right.
Yeah.
The powers that be want to shut us down because we're too close to the truth.
Yeah, and he called everybody out. Outside of the Children of God, anybody who tried to come in to take people away or to tell them that what they were doing was wrong, they were called systemites.
I kind of like that. It sounds like it's out of Hellraiser. That's pretty. I want to be a systemite.
But by the time Black Lightning showed up, Burke had already been releasing Mo letters for years and was starting to turn them sexual in the most subtle of ways. There was one called Squeeze, Don't Jerk, which was a reference to trigger discipline while using a gun rather than masturbation. You're supposed to squeeze the trigger, not pull the trigger. And he wrote,
"Squeeze, don't jerk, or you may miss the mark. And that's a sin." And that's a sin!
Are you talking about guns, or are you talking about me grabbing your dick?
That's funny. What am I doing right now?
You're holding your... You want me to grab it?
Yep.
Okay. 1971.
I'm not subtle.
No, not at all, actually.
Bless me for being subtle. If subtle was a crime, I am innocent.
Yeah, no.
In 1971, Berg wrote a Mo letter called I Got a Split, in which he explained that it was necessary for him and Zerbe to leave the country to spread the word of God. Now, this right here, what Henry's about to read, is an example of what Berg wrote in I Got a Split as to why it didn't really matter where he was, comparing himself to the presence of Jesus. And this is some insane cult doublespeak bullshit.
Hey there, party people. Hey there. How's everybody feeling? How's the mood of the room? Now remember, he's right here with me now, in me. But he's just as much right there with you, in you there, right now, at the same moment, in the same power, just as intimately and personally as he is here with me, in me. You can enjoy him just as much as I can. And I can thrill to his presence just as much as you can. And we can all enjoy him together anywhere, everywhere, anytime, all the time, in all his power and fullness. Just as much for you as for me, and just as much for them as for us, and just as precious and sweet and intimate as for any, by his spirit, through his words. For the words that I speak unto you, they are spirit, and they are life. Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Jesus Berg, I just have one question. Can we go to three ply? I have just had a bad problem lately. I need to triple it up.
What am I doing right now?
You're holding your cock.
Yeah.
Save big money on everything for your spring projects at Menards. We have all of your garden and landscaping essentials. Master Garden Premium Garden Soil contains a slow-release fertilizer that feeds gardens for up to 9 months. It produces better results and is ready to use for all your gardening needs. Save big on Menards' great selection of garden and landscaping products. Compare brands in-store or online at Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Legend has it, underneath the NJM insurance offices lies a mysterious room of long-forgotten, moldy mascot memorabilia. Often pitched by ad agencies, always rejected by NJM. Is it real? We may never know. But what is real is NJM's dedication to doing what's right for their customers. Astoundingly, they're proud to put policyholders first. No jingles or mascots, just great insurance. Learn more at NJM.com.
On this episode of Plant Killers, we'll explore one nation's most notorious fruit and vegetable killer, bad dirt. What makes bad dirt so bad? The answer? The ingredients. But fear not, true crime enthusiasts. This story has a happy ending. New Miracle-Gro Organic Raised Bed and Garden Soil. It's made with quality organic ingredients from upcycled green waste like compost and aged bark. Unlike the other guys who can't say the same. Looks like bad dirt's murdering days are over, thanks to Miracle-Gro. Join us next time on Plant Killers.
You know what's also interesting? Another quote that David Berg used to use all the time?
To the pure, everything is pure.
Yeah, which pretty much meant that they could do...
They could do whatever they want, and they're fine?
Yeah. It's the Christian way of saying, like... David Berg managed to find in the Bible multiple passages which pretty much translate to do as thou wilt is the whole of the law.
Yeah, it's because the Bible is a horoscope of opinion, of ideas. You can do whatever you want with the Bible. You can make it seem like...
They were filling out pages. They were literally just been like, oh, man, I wonder what's how this is going to end. They were just clickety-clacking, keeping themselves busy.
That's it.
So from that moment forward, after he wrote, I got a split, Berg carefully chose which members of the cult he interacted with, and if that member wasn't a part of the inner circle, if it was just a rank and file, it was almost guaranteed that if Berg brought him in, he was just looking for a new fuck doll.
I see.
Berg would only communicate to the lower level members from that point forward through his Mo letters, which he declared in 1972 to be, quote...
The very voice of God himself. It sounds like this, and it is a beautiful voice.
It is a beautiful voice. Man, Mo letters, Mo problems.
Thank you.
That's what I'd say.
Thank you. I'm copywriting that, by the way.
You copyright that?
I'm copywriting that. I can. I will. I'm going to do that. I'm putting it on shirts. It's my brand. It's my new thing. It's how I'm ending everything from now on.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, and he said that these Mo letters, that they were on the level of the Bible. And at the end of the day, really, the children of God, they're kind of like a mixture of the Manson cult and the Mormons. See, both the children of God and the Mormons encouraged polygamy, and both attached writers to existing biblical materials to make Christianity their own thing while still being familiar. failure. But Berg took it way further than the Mormons and started encouraging wife swapping and orgies in Mo letters, such as revolutionary sex, revolutionary lovemaking, love light, and the goddesses.
Huh. They all sound like reality television shows now. As a matter of fact, there is a show called Wife Swap, and I'm pretty sure Berg is the executive producer.
So Berg wrote that masturbation in public should be allowed, saying, quote,
"In the Western culture, it has been made a taboo. This has made public nudity or public sexual activity not only considered sinful, but they've also passed laws to make it even illegal when, as far as God's laws are concerned, these things are not unlawful at all."
I remember that when Jesus spoke on the mountain about publicly jerking it.
You know, you could jerk off, right?
Anytime
guys, why aren't we jerking off? Guys, hey, guys.
That's right.
You jerk off. Hey, Paul, Thomas. Guys, jerk each other off, huh? This is fun. Having fun.
Sort of the deleted scenes of The Last Supper was when they all jerked off one by one.
Yeah, when the 12 disciples all played Ookie Cookie.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Why is the bread so good tonight?
They played Ookie Challah like 97 times. You know that they did that all the time. That's how they fucking, when they were just wandering around the desert.
Not so unleavened anymore.
So Berg, talking about his own first experience with masturbation, wrote,
"I will never forget that I was first taught how to successfully masturbate to a complete orgasm by an older boy who whispered it in my ear while sitting in the third church pew from the front during one of my father's Sunday morning sermons. I gladly accepted his invitation to go home with him for Sunday dinner to learn more, and he was most happy to teach me along with some of the rest of our friends. His simple little lesson was the soul of brevity. You just jiggle it up and down until it feels so good it hurts. Yes. Oh. Yes, please. Yes, queen. Like, yeah, give it to me.
Sounds like you can't flush the toilet. Just jiggle the handle a bit.
Yeah.
You just jiggle it up and down until it feels so good it hurts.
And that's also my comedy. That's my comedy philosophy.
That's it. So he was molested. That's his story, right?
Yeah, I mean, by an older boy.
But he flipped it around.
Yeah.
He flipped it around to the hottest thing he could think of.
Yeah, I guess so. That's true.
Yeah, just remember that in the minds of Berg and his followers, this shit was on par with Jesus' Sermon on the Mount.
I remember that when Jesus was like, "And I looked at my mother Mary, and I got rock hard, and I fucked my father."
Yeah, because Berg would say, "It's like, you know, the Bible was written a long time ago. It's time for the new stuff, and this is the new stuff that Jesus wants you to know. This is the new stuff that God wants you to know." He's telling me specifically because, remember, he's Moses, so he's the conduit between God and the people of Earth.
And what didn't Moses have? Playboy. And think about it now.
But this is also when he uses all that to kind of jump into pedophilia with 2 feet.
He's just nudging into it a little
bit. Nudging into it. He's jumping. He's a lemur going off the edge.
He's definitely
nudging into it.
He's dancing like nobody's watching if the dancing was molesting the various members of his family.
I think he's dancing like his family is watching. He's not nudging. He's not even close to pretending like he doesn't want to have sex with all the kids.
But to the cult members, like, they are taking these things a little bit at a time, is that he's just kind of suggesting it. Like, he's just kind of throwing it out there, just kind of seeing what sticks to the wall and getting people used to this stuff.
Trumpian.
Like, this little bit right here is buried in paragraph 54 of Revolutionary Sex.
Yeah.
Good God.
"If early marriage is wrong, then why did God make girls able to conceive and bear children at such an early age if it is wrong for them to marry at such an age? In most Western cultures, it is even illegal."
Sounds like Osama bin Laden.
"The so-called, quote, unquote, child marriages are usually forbidden by law in the West, whereas they are quite common in the East, and why not? God has made boys and girls desirous of and able to have intercourse and bear children at those ages. So I say, pop the top." And you know what they say, once you pop that top, the fun don't stop.
Don't bring Pringles into this. Do not bring one of my favorite snacks into your disgusting tale.
"If I were to name Pringles, I would call them Dingles, because Dingle is a funny name for my penis."
All right, leave Pringles alone. And also, doesn't his logic fall apart when he brings up the boys?
"Mr. Kissel, what am I doing right now?"
You're holding your cock.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, he doesn't come right out and advocate pedophilia and incest just yet, but he is just yet.
I don't know.
The way, if you can't, you know, figure out the foreshadowing, eventually he does.
Yeah, I think they figured it out, Marcus.
But right now, he's planting the seeds for acceptance. The only sexual activities that he preaches against are pulling out and male homosexuality, saying about the latter,
to say the least, sodomy is insanity, insanitary, infectious, disgusting, degrading, dirty, perverted, and hazardous to the health of both body and mind.
Jesusburg, you fucked your son's wife.
Yep. Oh, okay. Yeah. Took her to town. I took her to town. I took her to the library. I got her a library card. I took her to the dump. I took her back from the town. And I mean, I had sex with her.
Huh. Yeah, and of course, with Berg, lesbianism, totally cool.
Totally dope.
Totally, oh, yeah. Totally fucking sweet, bro. Yeah. This is
every Skid Row fan from the 1980s. This, remember that when you had to win the argument against homosexuality not being a crime? You'd be like, do you like two chicks making out? You'd be like, yeah. Two dudes? Yeah, no.
This is what he wrote about lesbianism.
Personally, I don't see that lesbianism is any different from any other form of masturbation or sexual massage, which the Bible also seems to ignore.
They're written by a human penis. This is just, if balls can write, this is what balls create.
Can't imagine anything illegal or immoral about just two just bleach blonde girls with long fingernails just scissoring each other like a screaming ex. I want to see it every day.
So maybe we could go to the carnival, break the right balloons, and we can get those. We can get a picture of the Barbie twins. Would you like to do that?
Yeah. Also, you know what really creeps me out is when I'm having sex with my son's wife and he says, good job, daddy. It's like, leave me alone. I'm trying to fuck your wife.
That is hard for you.
He gives little kisses on the cheek. I can't stand hugging my son. But when I am just up to the pubic hair in my daughter, that's where I'm at peace. That's my me time.
You're disgusting. You're a horrible person.
Now, as the years went by, the Mo letters ranged from sexual instruction to completely bizarre beliefs to the seemingly mundane, with one of the Mo letters just only being about all the things that you need to know when you buy a boat.
This is like when you go to see Bob Dylan now. That's all he talks about. You go to see Neil Young now. It's just about cars. He made a whole album about cars. He's out of touch. What I'm saying is he's out of touch with the core constituents here.
He is very out of touch. I would say that.
Yeah.
He can't go see Siegfried and Roy, but he can have sex with his granddaughter.
I see. Maybe one of those tigers, too.
Yeah, now eventually these Mo letters, they became illustrated. They used the underground comic book style that was popular in the 70s.
And this is very interesting because it completely borrows from the R. Crumb style
totally.
Of drawing.
Like comics that, with that an X.
And they were highly sexualized. And also very similar to R. Crumb's lifestyle as well. David Berg and R. Crumb could be compared very easily, because R. Crumb is also sexually obsessed.
You know that?
Well, R. Crumb's just sexually obsessed with big girls. He's nowhere near the monster that David Berg is.
No,
R. Crumb isn't a monster. He's just a weirdo.
I'm just saying he's horny.
Yeah, he's super horny.
Yeah, if you want to think about, like, who would R. Crumb be if he could come back, you know, or I don't even know if he's dead, but if the perfect spirit animal for R. Crumb, if you remember that Far Side picture where the woman, she's very heavy set, she's posting up the lost chihuahua, and the chihuahua's in her butt cheeks?
Uh-huh.
That's R. Crumb. R. Crumb wants to be that chihuahua so bad.
I honestly can see how it's sexy.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, totally. Riding a big woman around, he loves
it.
Yeah.
I'd have a great time. I'd fucking buy a special cowboy hat for it. I'd have a great time with it.
Yeah, and like Henry said, these illustrated Mo letters, this is when this shit gets extremely dirty and extremely graphic. This is an excerpt from one comic called Dad's Sex Talk.
Okay, I'm going to vomit.
I'm going to put it this way. Let me preface this. If you ever have a friend that's like, let's say you have like a crush on a girl or like a crush on a boy, and you have a friend that's like maybe going to hook up with that person, a really good thing to do is be like, hey, you should check this out, and give them a copy of Dad's Sex Talk, the one comic, and they will never have sex with anything ever again.
Yeah. The sex talk from a father to a son should be wear a condom, and then the son looks at his father, says, okay, and then the conversation's done.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, this is a little different.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. Also, the reason why it's called Dad's Sex Talk is because Dad was one of his names. He was Moses David Mo, and a lot of people called him Dad.
It's so gross.
Yes.
Here's what it is.
The Lord put pubic hair between a girl's legs for a good reason. It's a cushion to absorb friction. He put a nice shock absorber right on your bumper. Now, some girls let that beard grow so long that it's almost impossible to find an opening in the undergrowth. I like to see it nice and neat and well-trimmed. Not shaved, but trimmed with a pair of scissors. Leave enough so that it's still a good shock absorber, especially if you do a lot of you-know-what. Fucking. Fucking. That's what I said. I'll just say it out loud. Have I been... Again, put me in jail for being a subtle artist. Put me in jail for it if it's a crime, because I am sick and tired of being subtle. I think it's time to really just straight up, when you're fucking and you're really just grinding against your daughter, you need a shock absorber on there, because I say, right. I hurt myself.
Now,
it's more for the protection of the man.
Yeah. Undergrowth. Did you think that was an appropriate term there?
Yeah, I did. I wrote it, didn't I? Mr. Sweet Little Lamb. Have you had sex with your daughter today?
No, I don't have a daughter, and I wouldn't do that.
That's why you're so surly. You need to make a daughter and then have sex with her.
Just don't agree with anything that you did with your life.
What am I doing right now?
You're holding your cock.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, that's what these things were half the time, is that half of them were just instructions to his followers on how he liked to fuck.
Yeah, like, how he wanted their bush to look like.
Yeah, how he wanted their bush to look like. And he'd even talk about his sexual preferences. He'd wander off into that every once in a while. This is another thing he wrote in Dad's Sex Talk.
The reason I could never go much for the man sucking the woman is it's almost impossible for the woman to not have some kind of odor down there, no matter how much he washes. My nose is so sensitive, I can't take it.
Yeah, he doesn't like to be in the undergrowth, I guess. It's sort of like Stranger Things. What was it?
The Upside Down.
The Upside Down world, but it's the undergrowth.
He is complete filth.
Yeah.
So at what point does he... okay, at some point he still has to be giving sermons about, mm-hmm. like, you know, being good to your fellow neighbor.
He jumps off of it. He starts with it.
Yeah.
So he just... This is... And so if you're receiving this letter and you're in the children of God, isn't this kind of a wake-up call that this guy is just a horny old man now?
Well, there were, throughout the 70s, there were some purges because people were starting to look at these things and listen to some of his practices and go, like, this wasn't what we really signed on for.
No.
So David Berg, at a couple of points, did purge a lot of people. Anybody who said they didn't like the fuck direction that the children of God was going in, he purged them. He said, you're no longer a part of it. I am Moses David, I know best. This is the word of God. And if you do not believe in this, then you are essentially lost and you're no longer welcome here.
But then I would assume those people, because they're so perverted by this ideology, they were probably hurt by getting purged, I would assume.
Very much so.
Right.
People, think about it. You give up your whole life. You give up your whole life. You gave up all your possessions. You gave up a bunch of your familial connections, your friends. You gave up everything to be there. You now have a whole community there. Your kids are there being raised by three different people. A lot of times you don't know who the father is of your kids or the father, like where they are. So you're trapped in there a little bit.
Well, that wouldn't be the case for me, because we would just be like, who's the 6'7" kid? Oh, that's my kid. Yeah, I can't. I'm sorry. I can't get out of paying child support on that monster.
But I will say the one good thing is that he did let them go. It wasn't like Om Shinrikyo where they just got shot in the head.
Yeah, he did let them go, but he gave them the same sort of speech that Scientologists give to people when they want to leave the cult. They ask them the most terrifying question, which is, are you ready to leave everything that you've ever known? So, with these comic book characters, after all the sex talk came, it started getting even weirder, because he was now able to illustrate characters. Now he was able to create his own little universe. Characters like the Aborigine Hong Kong Goolagong.
I will refrain.
Thank you. Very good, Henry Zebrowski.
Now, Berg said that Goolagong was an Australian Aboriginal hitchhiking demon who attacked Christian missionaries who were trying to bring Jesus to Aboriginal people. And the name Goolagong came to Berg during a coughing fit where, quote,
Every cough was a word, and every word was shaped like a nipple, with all the nerves running up to the nipple.
How drunk are you right now?
Yep. It's more like, is the world spinning? Like, stop this rock. I need to get off of it. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, I'm holding onto the floor, but it's like, it's hard to get off the floor. You know what I'm saying? Oh, God, is this, has this been my granddaughter this whole time? Oh, fuck.
Rough days.
Yeah, and he further stated that Gulagong's attack was like being overwhelmed by smothering breasts.
Just can't come up with any other analogies, though, other than about the female. It's just always the female anatomy.
That's it. And Berg, and later his wife, Zerbe, wrote about spirit helpers, who were either religious or mythical figures or dead celebrities who would guide Christians in spiritual warfare. The Children of God team of spirit helpers included Elvis, Merlin, Frosty the Snowman, George Burns, Rasputin, Arthur Ashe, the deceased tennis player,
yes,
and Richard Nixon.
Quite a team of rivals there.
An eclectic group, I guess, to say the least.
But also in the world of chaos magic, that's how you would do that as well. You would use those images.
Yeah, but
to build your rituals. I wouldn't necessarily trust Frosty the Snowman with protecting me in the other realms.
Yeah, well, Karen Zerbe would actually write letters from these people saying that these people had contacted her from beyond the grave and had dictated letters to her, and she would write a whole letter that she said that Arthur Ashe had dictated to her in a dream and would present it as fact.
And then Nixon was like,
"What did Frosty the Snowman write?"
He doesn't got no hands. Doesn't he have sticks for hands?
I sure hope they made the whole world a refrigerator by now, because that's how I could be president.
Yeah, he just put together the concert he wanted to see. Elvis headlining, Bird's emceeing, Nixon just happy with the show.
Yeah, Berg also wrote about the literal heaven, which the Children of God believed was a space city called Space City.
That needs a name. It needs a name.
Clever. I'm surprised he didn't describe it as a big tit.
It's a giant titty that you live on it, and it's like, and the bar and the convenience store and the grocery store are all on the nipples, because that's where I'm living. It's also where the apartment building is. It's right on the nipple, because that's the best part of the breast. I feel that the best part of the breast is the nipple.
Jesus, Berg, I just need any analogy to describe the city that isn't anatomy related when it comes to women.
Okay. The city is like a giant asshole. It's like a giant.
Maybe like a basketball. Is it a basketball, maybe?
No, it's definitely not like a basketball.
No.
Definitely not. It's more like a...
Is anything
pussy.
Other than... Okay.
Is it like a pussy?
Anything
pussy's
else.
Like a cavern. What's round? What's round and big?
Yeah. Thank you.
What am I doing right now?
You're holding your cock.
Yes.
Well, he said that this space city, it existed within a 1,500-mile-long pyramid, which is kind of like a titty.
Yeah.
That was located inside the hollow moon.
Full circle.
Yeah. And when it was pointed out to Berg that a 1,500-mile-long pyramid could not physically fit inside of the moon, Berg...
Why are you even bringing this shit up? Why are you even correct him at this point? Like, why would you be like, I'm not sure, not exactly an astrophysicist here, Dad, but I've been looking at the moon. Seems like it's a bit of a generous assumption. You can get a 1,500-mile pyramid in there. I don't mean to copy edit you.
Does seem like a strange part to draw a line in the sand
regarding that. Yeah, and Berg, using classic hollow moon logic, said about
it's impossible for astronomers to obtain an accurate size of the moon. Because it's so far away.
Brilliant.
How are we supposed to get rulers there? How are we supposed to get titties there? The moon is at least 9 million titties wide.
There's a mathematical formulation that they use to, you know, really kind of decipher the size of the moon and those things.
Are you some kind of astronomer?
No, I'm just a normal person.
Really interesting. It's interesting because it seems like only an astronomer would give me some kind of feedback like that, and you know for a fact that I hate astronomers. Unless they can all officially change their names to
Astromus.
I'll go with that.
Got you again. What am I doing right now?
You're holding your cock.
Yes, every time.
Every
it's
time.
It's all I think about.
I know. It seems to be the only thing you really hold. I never even...
Have you had this rotten piece of grapefruit I found? It's no. All you're allowed to eat.
I'll have it. Thank you.
Very good. That's all you can have.
I'm appreciative. Yeah.
Now, in one of the Mo letters written by Zerby, who took over when Berg was too sick and weak to write, she said that when a member of the family is masturbating or having sex, they were required to imagine that Jesus was actually having sex with them. And this wasn't just women. It was men, too. Everyone had to imagine Jesus was fucking them. And if you're wondering about the whole sodomy thing that we mentioned earlier, they got around this by saying that men not only had to fantasize about Jesus fucking them, but they also had to fantasize about being women themselves.
So if you are Jesus and every time you're summoned, you have to go help the person who's summoning you, this is a terrible cult for you. He just has to go bone all these dudes.
Yeah. And Zerby, she even gave a list of phrases that members could say while Jesus was fucking them, a few of which we will now share with you.
Come, I'm here for you.
I want you inside of me. Give me your seeds.
I want to woo you, you Jesus, and to be wooed by you.
Fill me.
I'm getting really horny for you, Jesus.
Oh, my... Okay. My pussy's excited for you, Jesus.
I'm wild about you. I'm crazy about your penis.
About your penis. I mean, you... This is... If I'm someone said that to me in bed, I'd be like, what is happening?
Jesus, I'm lost in your love. With every thrust of your penis, you take me higher and higher.
This is her writing this, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay. So this... All right. Lastly, I'm desperate for your big, hard penis.
Come on,
I'm desperate. I don't know how to.
You're masturbating. Masturbating in the front. You're getting fucked from behind. Wait, Jesus Christ! You're about to orgasm.
All right. I'm desperate for your big hard penis. I crave it because I want your seeds. Oh, I want your seeds. Oh, I don't know. Oh, I'm desperate for your big hard penis. I crave it because I want your seeds. Oh, that's good. Woo! This is a fun Mo problem.
And then the end of it all comes the thank you.
Thank you for wanting me, for desiring me, for exciting me. Thank you for wanting to fuck me and becoming one with me and give me your seeds.
And if you'd like to read the whole list, of which there are dozens and dozens of Jesus fuck phrases, go read the Mo letter where they're all listed, which is called Cool Tips for Hot Sex.
Good. These people are something else.
So by 1973, the Children of God had 2,400 full-time members in 140 colonies in 40 different countries.
Hold on. They're growing?
Oh, rapidly.
This entire time, they've been growing. Well,
think about this. Think about how much fucking is happening. Yeah. They're having babies like crazy. What we're going to learn is they're going to manipulate their own numbers by explaining like, oh, we have so many people that are in the cult. But that's sort of the reason there's a practical side of the sex cult, which is we now are making our own members. We're making our own people that are now born into the cult. And when they're born into the cult, it's even harder for them to leave.
Yeah. And they're even starting to absorb other Christian cults like Seattle's Jesus People Army.
Seattle's Jesus People Army.
Yeah.
Oh, they're fun. Yeah. That sounds fun.
Yeah, they would just, these other cults would come and check out the Children of God thing, and they'd say, like, wow, we've been doing this all wrong. Let's just throw in with this lot. And then suddenly the cult would gain 40, 50, 60 new members.
Yeah,
they were actually known as a predatory cult.
Yeah.
Like, literally, David Berg would, as a group, he would show up to other Christian, groups, Christian meetups, and absorb them and be like, now you're us. You're a part of us now.
Yeah.
Kind of a Kirby the Love Bug or a, remember, not Kirby the
Herbie,
Love Bug.
Herbie the Love Bug.
No, Kirby, the cloud that sucks everything up.
You know, that's 2 weeks in a row that you've name-checked Kirby's Adventure.
I love it.
Yeah, why?
Because
it kind of looks like a little breast. chest?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, he kind of does.
Oh, wow.
But 1973 also came with a tragedy as Aaron Berg, one of David's sons, suffering from major depression, spurred on presumably by his father's fucking of his wife and using it as a family power play, jumped off a goddamn mountain in Geneva and died.
Yep, that'll do it.
Yeah,
there's a lot of this. There's a lot of people end up moving towards suicide.
A lot of people and a lot of former members, like people who leave the cult, especially some of the younger kids. A lot of it ends in suicide.
Well, that's actually very sad. But with this younger boy, if you are someone who talks people off of mountains from committing suicide to stop them from committing suicide, I don't even think he would have anything to say to this guy. Be like, why do you want to do it? He's like, my father fucks my wife. He'd be like, jump. You gotta jump.
Got it.
But as far as we know, Aaron. Death didn't have too much of an effect on his father. Berg was way too into fucking at that point to really care, and in 1974 he would introduce the most famous of all Children of God recruiting methods, flirty fishing, which is where we will begin the conclusion of the Children of God next week.
Whew, all right.
Wow.
I am so surprised that this entire time they've been making the snowball bigger. I thought this would be sort of the decline when they start going off into these sexual deviancies.
God, no.
But I guess it was working for them, I guess.
It's too late by then. Now you already got the crew, and everyone's horny.
Yeah.
They don't just got the crew, they're adding to it.
Yeah, and flirty fishing is when their membership truly explodes.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
Well, interesting stuff.
We got to start flirty fishing for the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
we're all taken, which just doesn't work for us, but we should just get, like, Travis to go do it.
Yeah.
We should get little Travis, our intern, to go out there and really start trying to bring in the dudes.
Yeah, and his name is Titties already, so we're
His
good.
Name is not Titties. You guys just started calling him Titties, and he doesn't like it. It's very sensitive.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much for listening, and we have some shows coming up we have to talk about?
Yeah, we have some shows coming up. The next two shows that are on sale is... you can go to cavecomedyradio.com/live and buy tickets for our early show in Portland and our early show in Boston. Seattle is sold out. Portland, the late show, is sold out. But I think we're going to be releasing some tickets day of. So nice. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at LP on the left and go and join our Facebook group because we always announce stuff there. As soon as those tickets are released, we always announce it there. Anytime the tickets are released to new shows, we're going to be coming to Kansas City, Missouri. Here soon.
Ooh.
We're going to be coming to San Francisco. We're going to be coming to Toronto. We're coming to a ton of places, but these shows sell out very fast. So if you want first crack at them, or actually, if you want second crack at them, you can go and join our Facebook and Twitter pages. If you want first crack at them, go and join our Patreon page at patreon.com/lastpodcastontheleft. We always let our Patreon members know about upcoming shows and when tickets go on sale before we let anybody else know. It's just a little bit of a thank you for supporting us. Even people who only donate $1 per month get that advance knowledge.
Yep.
Thank you guys so much for everything that you've done. Of course, as we've been saying, Ben has been able to quit Fox News and is making all of his money just on Last Podcast. I'm doing the exact same thing, and we could not have done this shit without you guys. So thank you so much for supporting
us. Thank you so much.
We love it. It means a lot to us.
It really
does. We work very hard.
And we have some exciting new, we can talk about the merch page.
Absolutely. We opened up a brand new store, cavecomedyradiomerch.com, where right now we're just selling our logo shirt and our Hail shirt. It's a lot easier than our old system. It's just an online store, and you're going to be getting them a lot faster than you used to get them. Everybody who's still waiting on shirts in our old system, Wendy is sending out the rest of them this week. We've got a couple of returns, so if you have any problems, if you haven't gotten your shirt, cavecomedyradio@gmail.com is the address to go to. But all the rest of you, cavecomedyradiomerch.com is where you can get your t-shirts today. And we're also going to be releasing, now that we've got this new deal on this new site, we're going to be releasing a fuck ton of new t-shirts. We're going to be bringing the Heart Satan shirt back into production, so anyone who missed out on that one can go buy it at the site here in the next couple of days. And we've already sold a bunch. Thank you guys so much for supporting. It's just another way to support us. And thank you guys so much for supporting us and everything that we do. We could not tell you how much we appreciate people people really rewarding the hard work that we've put into this show over the last 5 or 6 years.
And what you've done with Cave Comedy Radio in general, Marcus, has been amazing. There's so many shows in the top 100 on iTunes, top 50 on iTunes. It's unreal.
Yeah, it's real good. And I'm not being sarcastic.
You sound like you're being sarcastic.
You sound like you're being sarcastic.
I'm not being sarcastic at all. I'm really proud of Marcus and how much work he's done.
LA has changed you.
No, it hasn't. LA is not me different at all.
You are different. Yeah, so thank you so much for supporting Cave Comedy Radio. And many of the shows now will start having t-shirts and stuff like that. So there'll be an Able Against Top Hat shirt coming out, a Roundtable shirt, I'm sure a Page 7 shirt.
Yep, we're going to make a Don't Come At Me With That shirt.
Don't Come At Me With That shirt.
I'm very excited about. Possibly a Hakuna Mafuckit.
Maybe. That would be amazing.
I'm going to be developing some shirts, and we'll see what kind of letters we get. That's what I'm excited for.
That will be exciting.
Oh, and this Friday, actually it would be tomorrow, Jackie Zabrowski is going to be sitting in for Ben on Last Stream on the Left.
Yes.
Which is going to be fun and weird, and we can't wait for it. That's at 7:30 at AdultSwim.com. And it's every single Friday on AdultSwim.com at 7:30 p.m. Eastern.
Absolutely. So that'll be super exciting. Thank you so much for supporting all the shows. Again, Abe Lincoln's Top Hat for everything political. We've been crushing it. So thank you so much for your support. Roundtable of Gentlemen has been so fun. Mattress Gate. It's driving me nuts.
It's
but
real.
It's not real. Yeah. It's not a real thing.
And I cannot wait on Roundtable to pull out the new book that Maria gave me. Oh, what is it? Garfield's Insults, Put Downs, and Slams.
Yeah.
Yes. And those
Garfield.
Marcus, read a couple of slams.
Garfield.
Okay. Hey, Ben.
Yeah.
Hey, Ben, don't be self-conscious about your height. Save it for your face.
Yeah. You fucking ugly. You're tall and ugly.
You are a cartoon cat. I will not be insulted by you.
Hey, Lurch, where's the rest of your family?
You fucking dumb bitch cat. You're a fake cat.
You're more than a tall person. You're also dumb, you piece of shit.
You fucking idiot.
All right. I don't think Garfield said that last one.
Always on top.
All right, yeah. Find Marcus Parks on Twitter at Marcus Parks. Henry's on Twitter at Henry Loves You, and Dr. Fantasty on Instagram. I'm on Instagram at Ben Kissel 1. Don't know how to use it. Don't really look at it. But you can find me on Twitter. I try to really interact with people on that platform. You can find me there at Ben Kissel.
Instagram. You can find all of us, all of Last Podcast Left, at LP on the Left on Instagram, Twitter, and all that horseshit.
Awesome.
Hail Satan, everyone.
Hail yourselves.
And hail Gein.
Hail me.
And magustalations.
Magustalations.
See.
Stay connected this winter with this unbeatable deal from Breezeline. Get reliable, fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month with all-in pricing for 2 years. But that's not all. Your first month is on us. This deal gets better with a free modem and installation, along with free Wi-Fi your way whole home coverage. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and keep all your devices connected and secured with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires March 3rd, 2024. Learn more at Breezeline.com.
For years, I just dreaded going to the dentist. But at Advanced Dentistry, I don't have to. First and foremost, they want you to feel comfortable when you walk in. Like, you'll feel it. Whereas in the past, I might have gone into the dentist and thinking, I might feel some pain at some point. But with IV sedation, it can be something that you don't dread.
If you've been avoiding the dentist because of fear, worry, or just not wanting to be judged, you're not alone. Visit nofeardentist.com to learn how IV sedation can change your life.